WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. You know, I don't drink beer in every segment. I had a segment earlier this week at Fadley's. So part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I was down there giving away Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. We had a winner in Fadley's, and everybody's a winner at Fadley's when you get the crab cake. But I had a fried oyster for the first time, really, that was ever any good. I had a delicious fried oyster at like 10:45 a.m., and I just felt like it needed beer. So I went and had me a beer. It was a Raven beer, so I want to give a shout out to my dude there. And I'm talking beer all week here. I got beer on the brain. I think I sort of have said that I think I'm going to mix beer with the Crab Cake Tour very, very soon. And when I think of beer locally, with all due respect to my dear friends, John Dow and George Acton and Bob Footlick and Bob Pinkner, who put me, gave me a chance, Matt Crow, the Leslie Schaller Footlick. I mean, all these folks who supported me through all these years. I was a proud beer drinker from the get-go. And the first guy I ever knew who made his own beer, I was stumbling up and down Cross Street as a very young man when the Pit Beef stand out there and the 8x10s blowing. And I had a great conversation with mothers earlier this year about how Dave Rather met his wife in Turner's with the special holograms that were there. But about five doors up, I met this guy. He brewed beer. He was always there. He always told me, this beer thing's going to catch on. One day when you're old, and you're 53 and you're begging me to come on your show to talk about Ukraine and World War III, you'll be drinking a dark stout that you used to call motor oil back in the 1980s. Ladies and gentlemen, the king of beer here in Maryland, Hugh Sisson, joins us, not from Cross Street, but from the where are you right now? Are you drinking a beer?
I'm drinking a beer.
God bless you.
Brand new one.
You were right. You were right. I love when people come to me, you know, I was right about Angelo. So you were right about beer. Matt Crow was right about beer. When you guys came to me and said, you will be drinking some Imperial Russian stout with vanilla that is going to be delicious and you're going to enjoy it. You always told me that I would graduate from modern light lagers in America. You swore to me that would happen.
It's happened all over. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's who knew? Who knew?
You knew.
Well,
knew.
I let me put it this way. I thought, and I was willing to take a risk, but I can't say that I knew.
You bet on beer. You win.
I did bet on beer. I bet on beer pretty big.
In all sincerity, we're going to talk about Ukraine and the state of the world and beer and God knows I want to learn from you. I should have listened to you all along, but I've caught up. I mean, I have I'll give a free plug. I don't know the Oliver Brewing. I don't know one beer from another. I tend to try every stout in the winter. I just love stouts. I love blueberry stouts. I love it. I'm stouty. I am not IPA-ish at all. If I ever do segments, I'll try your IPA. I'll call it bitter. And maybe at some point I'll catch on. My wife's trying to get me to eat beets. I'm still can't get to that, but I do love this thing now where I go into a place and the variety that's there, the amount of people like you that are being employed and employing and local and all the stuff that I'm sure Francho and I had Foxwell on, Mike Moeller's taught me a lot about the industry as well through the years. He's my first beer sponsor. He was with Moosehead in 1992. I had a Moosehead and I still love Moosehead to this day, but all kinds, I've already plugged a dozen beers and haven't even plugged yours, but and I know you love all kinds of beer, but you were really first on this thing about how this, much like what Howard Schultz did with Starbucks and bringing coffee here in a different refined way, you were first in school here to begin really a political fight. I mean, like Hugh Hefner's battles. And like, I think of you for 40 years as being the front line pioneer taking the arrows for beer in this state. Am I giving you too much credit, or are you going to be humble?
I'm going to be humble. I certainly had a hell of a lot to do with it. But you know, it's like a whole lot of things. I've been making beer professionally now for 33 years, but you know, back in 1981, 82, the family bar, we were one of nine bars on Cross Street, and all we had was everybody had the same thing. We didn't have any food. Everybody had the same booze. Everybody had the same beer. Everybody had the same music.
Now, you didn't have any food. Explain. You weren't allowed to?
No, this was back just before we developed that. So I turned Sissons into a beer joint way in front of anybody else.
When did that happen? What month, what year?
Oh, this is probably 1982.
So before the Orioles won, the Colts were still here. You were brewing beer there.
We started brewing beer there in 1989. But 89. We turned it into a beer-focused bar back in 82. I mean, for example, you mentioned Mike Moeller. I think I was his first draft Guinness account in the state of Maryland. So the first thing we did was we got all these crazy ass beers in there. We had like 140 different kinds of beer when nobody was doing that kind of stuff. And then we got this wild idea, gee, what could happen if we could actually make beer here? There were maybe 4 brew pubs in the entire country. It wasn't legal in about 40 states. There was no template to follow. I mean, you know, there's 9,000 breweries in the last 9 years. So the conversation nowadays goes like this. Hello. Yes. I'd like to order a brewery, please. Next Thursday will be fine. Thank you. Click. So that didn't exist.
Well, you're a passion play like me with sports. You're a passion play. No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had to figure all this out and, so we kind of, after a couple of years, sort of figured out, well, we could probably figure out how to do it. Then we had to conquer the legal issues. In 1987, we were fortunate enough to partner with George Della, who was a state senator, to put together the first Maryland brew pub law. I fully expected it to fail. It passed. So then we had the OF moment where we had to get the darn thing built before somebody else beat us to it.
I remember coming in and seeing your thing. And I guess maybe the second thing I ever saw was probably Bill Blocker, who I just friended over at Red Brick Station. When I lived in White Marsh in the late 90s. He was making beer. And I always thought, like, no offense, man. It was a little flatter for me than I liked. Right. It was because you're so used to the carbonation in modern. And I'll be honest, man, at 53, you never could have explained this to me about getting old. There's a lot of ish about getting old that ain't fun. You know that. But my palate would change.
Now.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Look at
just turned 68 last week.
Well, congratulations, man. I mean,
I'm at the point now where you cut my arm off and count the rings.
No, you're doing okay, man. You're not like a tree. You're aging like a fine stout. So I would just say, like, over the years, my palate, and I'm so blessed in that way. You know what I mean? Like, my mother introduced me to Chinese food when I was 10. I wasn't afraid of things, of food. Mm-hmm. I mean, seafood, eating crabs, getting messy, all of that kind of stuff has served me well to enjoy food and move my palate all, along the line. I remember the first time I ate sushi was like gross, right? Now I had it for lunch, right? So,
right.
But beer, and I don't say it's the last thing to come because I talk at length about how much I love vegetables, how I didn't really appreciate a tomato until I was 40, right? And I don't know, like... I drank Coors Light to drink 12 of them, right? We drank Budweiser because it looked good on a shirt. We grabbed Heineken. I still don't like Heineken. And we grab a Heine. We had the shirts in Ocean City, right? So, like, there was different marketing that was involved in all of this. And now, like, you get to be older, and I don't care what the can looks like. I mean, your bottom, it's nice. I maybe stare at it. I don't peel the labels because I don't have that angst anymore. But to me, it's like first sip. We get a can of anything. My kid loves beer. My kid's 37. He brings me single beers. Hey, Dad, I think you'll like this. I think you'll dig this. Try this. And it just sits in my fridge and we pull it out and it is fun. Beer is fun, Hugh Sisson.
It is fun. And it's been fun for a long time. And as I mentioned earlier, there's I think this number is not far off. There's 9,000 new breweries in the last 9 years. So there's a whole lot of new and a whole lot of different out there. And so it's a little problematic only because I think the consumer is in danger of being overwhelmed.
No doubt about it.
Remember
you used to get the Cheesecake Factory menu. You didn't know what to order. Yeah. It's too much. Man, you go to a liquor store now. It really is. You spend a little time. You see brands that you don't know
about.
Well,
when you go to the beer section, you're no longer just going right to one place and grabbing a 12-pack. you're now actually shopping in the beer section, which never used to be the case. So I think that for the most part, that's positive. The only thing that I find a little disappointing is that we've gotten to the point where it's so difficult to stand out. If you're a new brewery getting started, you know, the last thing in the world you probably want to make is an American style IPA, because if you're in the Baltimore metro area, you know, I've already established Loose Cannon. Flying Dog's already established something. There's a whole lot of other breweries that have already sort of kind of grabbed that market niche. So you're almost forced to go off and do, you know, a peanut butter jalapeno porter or something along those lines.
Just which I would enjoy immensely, by the way, if you try that.
So, but
add that to
so it's definitely a different animal, but I still think it's terrifically exciting because there's just so much variety.
Do you feel a little like Willy Wonka in this, that a guy like me with all these years later, Mr. Sport, like that I would be interested in this in the way that I, and everybody in my family, my wife, my daughter-in-law, we all like beer. We all kind of have the same palate about beer. None of, you know, like, so we try different things, whether we're out draft, seeing different things. Every time I go out, the marketing around all of this, whether it's, you know, the most interesting man in the world, but the marketing push to try to get you where you find something you love and you demand it or ask for it. And I know, you know, people, you've created incredible brand loyalty because of you and the personality and you being Baltimore. Like there's nothing more Baltimore than your journey in all of this, but sort of holding people's hands and bringing them across from Miller Lite or Coors Light or Bud Light, who built my radio station 25 years ago.
I mean, there's a lot of truth in that. It's been a really interesting journey because in the very beginning, and I'm talking like, you know, mid 80s, early 90s, if you were doing what I do, all you basically had to be was not Budweiser. But nowadays, the marketing has to be significantly more creative because you've got enormous competitors who are not Budweiser. It's a challenge. The cool thing is that there's still a lot of camaraderie in the industry, even though, you know, we're all jockeying for the same draft lines and the same spot on the shelf, et cetera, et cetera. There's still a lot of camaraderie. There's still a lot of folks reaching out, trying to help each other from a qualitative standpoint, or whatever. I mean, there is a Brewers Association of Maryland, which I co-founded with a guy named Jamie Finneran, who used to work for DeGrones a million years ago, and a few other guys. And that organization is still alive today. I mean, back in the days, there were like six of us. Now there, I think there's 150.
It's close to the club basement.
Well, it's too big for the club basement now. Right. But the whole thing is, and within the framework of that organization, we're all still working together for issues that are focused on our common good and helping each other with quality questions, et cetera, et cetera. Because it's hard. This is not an easy business to be in. It's a lot of fun and it's very rewarding. And hey,
cheers to you. Cheers results. To you. Yeah, you sisters here. For you with this Ukraine situation and the thing that sort of brought me to you, and I hope we get a beer in the same room. I've been Zooming. I'm out having crab cakes, drinking beer, talking about like these kinds of things with people. Right. You know, Marshall Weston from the Restaurant Association of Maryland had a meeting earlier. You know, I'm doing this crab cake tour. So I'm out moving around, but we've been masked up. We've been here living through vaccines and not vaccines and Trump and not Trump and masks on and masks off and all the things that are going on. And then we get this situation in the Ukraine. And as an aside, maybe you don't know this, and I've told the story a few times, but my wife and I have made a European plan this summer to go see the man who saved her life. The guy who saved her life is from Witten, Germany. He was 19 when he saved her life. It was 8 years ago this month that this happened. She's 27 now. He's married. We haven't met his wife. You know, we go over to Europe and the beer scene in Cologne and being, you think of Germany and beer. I have friends that go to Oktoberfest. How close that is to all of this unrest that's going on, this war that's happening. And that the spirit world, a dear friend of mine's involved in the tequila industry in Mexico and in San Francisco, and he does these things all over the world. And when things happen in your space where people drink, breweries, you mentioned the coalition here locally, but you've been involved drinking beer all over the world. You did research. I'm sure you've done research in Europe, Hugh, on some beverages, that your soul gets moved in a different way when you see these families, these women and children who are innocent victims being literally, we're looking at a modern Holocaust here if the world doesn't do something.
Yeah, I know. It's a complete mess. I mean, it's totally inexcusable. The one good thing, to the extent that there is a good thing, is that I see this. We're seeing a lot of parts of the West, whether it's European or the North American continent, et cetera, are beginning to move away from some of the divisive issues that we've been dealing with. And we're all focusing together, trying to figure out how the hell we can help this Ukrainian situation. We were in the really interesting position. So a friend of mine who works for our distributor in the Pittsburgh area, who happens to be Ukrainian, sent me this little, I guess, a media piece or whatever, about a brewery in Lviv in Ukraine, who basically, they shut down their beer production. I think they're actually making Molotov cocktails now, God bless them. But they basically said, any breweries that are out there, here are our recipes, here are our graphics, please brew a beer for victory. And the name of the brewery is Pravda. Brew a Pravda beer and sell it and focus, move those profits back over to here to help us with our folks over here. So that's what we're doing.
You're making a red ale?
We're making, they have four different recipes they published. And one of the ones they did, interestingly enough, is called an American Red Ale. The name of the product is called Red Eyes. So that's the one that we're brewing. It's already in the fermenter. We're gonna release it at the tap room at the brewery on April 1st. This is not April Fool's. We're gonna release it.
But
on
if
April
I come,
1st.
You'll have a fool there.
Well, we're gonna release it on April 1st. We're gonna do it in crowlers and draft. Crowlers are the big cans.
What time are you doing that?
We're kicking it off at 3:00 on Friday, April 1st.
Okay.
100% of all the profits are going to the United Nations. Let me make sure I get this correct, because I want to make sure I don't screw this up. Going to the United Nations Ukraine Humanitarian Fund. So we're also having some T-shirts, which have a nice little Putin.
Does it begin message. With an F? Yeah, I hope it
no,
does.
No, we decided not to do that. We can think that, but
it's in my heart.
I hear you. So our T-shirt, basically, because Putin's shtick is that he's Mr. Macho Man.
Right.
So our whole shtick is Putin drink light beer.
He drink pee pee water.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we're doing a T-shirt. 100% of those profits go. 100% of the beer profits go. And then about 10 days after we do that release, we're releasing about 100 kegs are going to go to local bars and restaurants to help also drum up some additional funds. And, you know, like I said, all of that money is going to get moved over to this UN Ukrainian Humanitarian Relief Fund.
Are you getting good at this when you're like, we're going to have 100 kegs? Or, you know, it'll be tell me the 10 places in the city where I can go and have it poured, like locally, that are pouring your drinks on Pouring Heavy Seas, where I can go get it.
Well, you know what? I don't know who they're going to be yet. I mean,
fair enough.
I mean,
but there is a whole thing that then you have a Ukrainian night in White Marsh or in Towson or in Randallstown or wherever, right?
Yeah, that we're this whole thing has come together like in about a week and a half.
I know. So, it's great when that happens, though.
We're still sort of going, oh, hey, that's a good idea. Let's see what that where that goes.
Oh, so Nestor wants me on. Okay, I'll go on with that clown.
That's right. So it's just one of those things where we want to do as much as we can within limited parameters, and we still have to make beer that we make a profit on so that we can stay in business.
I hope it tastes good, but I'm going to drink it anyway.
The beer's going to be really good, I'm sure. But we're just so happy to finally actually be able to do something which hopefully will help a little bit. I mean, the best thing that could happen would be for Putin to pull his troops out and then get the hell out of there, and then maybe we can help him rebuild a little bit. But I mean, what a mess.
I mean, I saw the Maripol videos. I shared it literally right before you came on the show. And, you know, I think all of our hearts break. Hugh Sisson is here. Heavy Seas, they're doing a Ukrainian thing. But, I've been wanting to have you on from the beginning through all of this and learning about, you know, the branded stuff that I've at restaurants. And I go back to your food, right? Like you right. mentioned, you're known for the beer and like all that. And you said you didn't have food on Cross Street in the beginning.
Not original.
No, but like when I knew, so I mean, I was born in 68. I probably hit Cross Street sometime between 85, 6, 7, 8. In that range, I started hanging out on Cross Street. It became a destination for us long before it was cool. It was a place to get cheap beer. Sometimes there were some cute girls. Most of the time, it was like a really decent jukebox, and it wasn't like the bars in Fells Point. It wasn't crowded like that. Now, it got a little bit more, and obviously, it's become what it's become 40 years later. But like late 80s, you had a wing that was like the greatest wing I've ever – it was like a grilled – lemony. I don't know what it was. It was literally not Old Bay. And I can't find it anywhere else. I mean, what?
No.
Please, if before I die, and now that I have an outdoor grill and live out in the woods, I need to like, do you serve that wing? Because at one point you had a manager down on not Broadway. What's the Central? At the restaurant that knew the recipe. I met a guy in there, knew you, worked for you. Like at that point, and he told me, he's like, those are the best wings I've ever had. And I'm like, yeah. Do people talk to you about that, or am I nuts in saying that?
No, you're not nuts for saying it. People, you know, we had really good food at Sisson's. That was something our chef developed because he wanted to do wings, but he didn't want to do them the way everybody else did wings. And I actually still see him with some frequency these days, even though we haven't worked together in almost 28 years. But
can you have him over one night? We'll do crab cakes. I'll do a whole show at your place, man. We'll drink your beer, but I'm not coming to your place if I don't get those wings. I'm being honest with you. The world needs those wings, Hugh.
It's true. I'm writing that down.
Oh, look at this. Like a real executive, man. It's like you run a brewery or something.
Yeah.
How many years for you, and you've rebranded at various points? You had a different name prior to.
Yep.
I mean, I went through a name shift after Nasty Nestor and WNST and like all of that. I'm 31 years into doing sports radio here, you know, after being at the paper. The paper's rebranded digitally. I'm not really in radio anymore. I'm a podcaster. So, I mean, you've really – I think of the wings, and I love your beers, and I try, you know, when I see it, I know it's you, and I feel that way about all the local places that we're out. You know, I'm partial to things here, you know?
Right. Totally. Well, the wings were good. Now you've got the gears going now. I got to go back in and see if we can pull some of that out. We don't have a full kitchen at the tap room, but we do have a quasi permanent food truck. We're partnering with the guys at Cooper's.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, best corn,
but,
man.
But
I
think I could get them to do these wings. The secret to Bill's wings were they were basically baked in a particular sauce that he had until they were cooked through. And then they stayed in the sauce, you know, in a hotel pan or whatever it was. And when we served them, they came out of the sauce and went on to the char grill. And then got grilled right before you served them.
They were so marinated. They were so complex.
Yes.
They're really complex.
Right. And they did really well with beer.
There you go. But pairs well with an American ale. Hugh Simpson is here from NBC. I wanted to ask you about rebranding and making it through all of this. I mean, I always, no offense, I don't know if you're rich, poor, in or out or wherever. I always saw you sort of as like, dude, that guy's doing something nobody's ever done. He's got lawyers. He's got to fight you. Like, he's got to get through all these things. And then, like, I saw the small beer thing as I'm like, how are they ever going to kick Budweiser's ass or Coors or, you know, like these companies that I would see that I thought had their ish together until they started selling off to foreign places and just sort of completely. The guy from Budweiser that bought the brewery, I've never met him. I don't even know who he is. I used to sit in the box with Mark Winter and John, people that were on the street, people you knew in Cross Street, bringing you kegs in to say, like, right. There was a local angle that went away that opened this door for, yep. I already plugged Raven because I drank his beer earlier today down at Fadley's, but I'm always thinking and buying local because I'm the smallest of small AM radio, but you really went through a lot of different things you were dabbling in while you made beer, right? Like trying to figure out where the future is, like literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's, I said it earlier, it's been a good journey there, but the value has actually been, a lot of it has just been the process of getting wherever the hell I ended up. You know, it's the cool thing about being in small business and the cool thing about having had the career that I've been so blessed to have actually had is that for most of it, there was no template. I mean, you had to figure it out on your own.
True entrepreneur.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Oh, all night long. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm doing something. Everybody that buys me or gets involved with me says, you're doing something nobody else is doing. I'm like, just like the first time, you know, like the last time around. And I can't stop that there. You know, there's a point in me where the writer, the journalist, all that, but the part where I'm trying to figure out tomorrow, you know, people still come up and say, you're the first guy that ever like texted me or tweeted me or whatever.
Right, right.
And I'm like, I don't know where that is, but I have such admiration for you and people like you that said shit to me in 1988 about beer. And you're like, what? Yeah, you like beer. Cause you're from Dundalk and you like going to Ocean City and girls and, you know, tastes good out in the cold and it tastes good in the warm and it it pairs well. I didn't never understood that. And now I really understand that. But like 40 years later, I really have great admiration for people like you that maybe saw things where I'm like, that guy's nuts. I'm never drinking a dark beer.
Nestor, you see what is an opportunity now.
Budweiser didn't see it. Miller didn't see it. You know what I mean? No, I don't think those people really saw all of you coming in the way that you've come. That one day, Mr. Budweiser would, Mr. Bush, the 14th, would walk in and see a wall where he's not on. And everybody's beer's there but him. It's
right.
Crazy.
Well, there's no doubt about it. In the earliest days, we were all perceived as being sort of a nuisance. And a nut bunch of nutcases that were going to go away. And it was really interesting, because in the first like 10 or 12 years that I've been in this business, you couldn't get an Anheuser-Busch wholesaler to bring in your products. They just wouldn't do it. They had this deal with August Busch, which basically said, you will only carry Anheuser-Busch owned and affiliated brands, period. And then finally, I want to say probably 12 or 13 years ago, I refer to it as the great jailbreak. The Anheuser-Busch distributors got tired of getting handed their ass in the market because all the Molson Coors wholesalers and a lot of other wholesalers all had craft beer brands, and they really didn't. So finally, the wholesalers kind of said, you know what, August? We're going to bring in some brands. And that was a big change. And that actually probably put a lot of momentum into the growth of the segment, because if you're an Anheuser-Busch wholesaler and to a slightly lesser, but not much lesser extent, or a Molson Coors wholesaler, you've got the reach. And if you've got a brand and the brand's got some legs, you can get them into the trade, as opposed to, you know, the small wholesalers, which they just don't have the reach. So it becomes.
I just knew how hard it was. It always was for you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it just was unspoken.
If you're the first guy, it's never easy.
Yeah. Pioneers because take the you're errors, the one. Man.
So what happens is you get the opportunity to go out and make all of the mistakes so that the other folks can learn from it. And that, you know what? That's just, you know what it's like. That's part of the game.
Well, I mean, Hugh Sisson is here, by the way, and we're promoting his Ukrainian night. It's April 1st, and it's no joke at all. I hope you go up to Heavy Season. Go out to the website. Go follow him on social media. Go have a beer. Go over to King Liquors and buy a six-pack. Do it all up. I would just say on the market and where it's going and younger people and palates. And I remember Rivaka was it for 5 minutes. Now everybody's bourbon, right? Like, so, right. You know, palates change and different things change. The one thing that I think that's so cool, it's almost like seasonal ice cream with my friends at Wise Markets, you know, the seasonal beer part of this and things that work and things that don't work and things that are good and not good, much like in your restaurant, you put the wings on, they were frigging great, and I ordered them, and you kept bringing them out, and you sold more of them, and if Guy Fieri was in town, he'd go make you $1 billion because it was that good, right? Like, literally. But the beer thing, you find your lane, right? And you find what sells and what you're doing. But I go back to the old Sissons and meeting you. I was younger, much younger, sometimes too young.
As was I.
Yeah, right. And you had the vat. And no offense, I don't know that I tried your beer there that much or thought it was a little weird. I always thought it was weird when they had a house beer. Like in Europe, it's like the thing of forever, right? I go get Kolsch's. There's 1,000 different Kolsch's in Cologne. But it was always a little flat and always a little weird. And I thought, you know, one day maybe they'll be able to make this as good as Mr. Bush does in that big old factory in St. Louis that I went to with my parents in 1983 and took pictures with the Clydesdales and, like, you know, all of that emotional, here comes the king, here comes the big number one.
Right.
So you get all of that vibe. And I thought, like, the refined part of that, and I guess I'm learning that with wine and vineyards and how grapes grow and where hop. Did I buy my hops on the internet or did I grow them someplace in Austria? The notion that you could get really good at making it and consistent at making it, that I would think that would be one of the harder things that you had to figure out in 1989. But now it feels like, to your point, I can buy this big silo that makes beer everywhere. I put the thing in, I get the thing from Ukraine, I make the, and it comes out, we ferment, we know exactly what we're doing on how to make a consistent product, right? I mean, and bottling and distributing, all these things that you were just making some beer there. It kind of had a little lower lip in the room and it kind of looked very Willy Wonka, dude. You were like the crazy professor.
Well,
it was like there was going to be steam coming out in a gobstopper.
Well, that back in those days, that really was probably a lot of what it was really like. I mean, so the cool thing about when I was doing the brewing at Sisson's, which I did for 5 years, and I loved it because I've always been sort of a hands-on kind of guy, and there's nothing more hands-on than putting on your t-shirt, going into the brewery, making a batch of beer. By the end of the day, you're sweaty and you're dirty and you've got spent grain on your shoulder from where you pulled out the grain from the mash tun and then picked the trash cans up and took it out to the dumpster. But at the end of that hot, sweaty, nasty day, there's a whole tank of beer. It's tangible. You have that immediate, it's not finished for many, but you have that immediate
you put in a day's
ability
work
to point to what you just did.
Right.
A sense of accomplishment. I miss that. I haven't actually done any of the brewing. Excuse me. I've done a minuscule amount of brewing at Heavy Seas. But for the most part, from the moment that I started that company, I always hired other people to do it because I knew that I was going to have to focus on the business. And so I needed somebody else who could focus only on the product. Having said that, I really miss the whole process of throwing valves and getting dirty. But, you know, I'll never really revisit that again. But that's okay.
What kind of beer would you make? If you could make one batch of beer to end your life, end your career, to drop the mic and go off to Tahiti, what beer would you make? If you could make
Winter Storm. Winter Storm.
That's it?
That's our Category 5 ale. It comes out. It actually went on hiatus for 2 years. I'm bringing it back this fall. It's a 7.5%.
I want the first glass of the next batch you make.
I'm sorry?
I want the first glass of the next batch you make.
I'll let you know when we're going to release it.
I'm
get your fanny over to the tap room.
Recapping, Hugh Sisson is here. If you've just joined the pod, we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. I have a whole April schedule. I'm going to be at Greenmount Station with Chris. I'm going to be at the Chaucer. I'm going to be with Andy up at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog. That's now in White Marsh. So staying with old friends, including Hugh Sisson. Tell everybody what you're doing on April 1st. Again, if they just came into the radio side or they just want to hear it again and take notes and say,
sure.
There's this Ukrainian thing, an American red ale thing that's going to be happening, and it's going to be delicious. And it, more than anything, spiritually, you're going to get the right kind of people out to heavy seas for this one.
Absolutely. We are in quasi partnership or collaboration with the Pravda Brewery in Lviv in the Ukraine. We are brewing one of their recipes, which is going to be an American red style ale called Red Eyes. We're going to release it on draft and crowler in the tap room April 1st. 100% of all the proceeds until we run through that first 15 barrels of beer will go to the United Nations Ukrainian Humanitarian Relief Fund. And then shortly thereafter, there will be draft kegs that will be distributed throughout the Baltimore Metro to continue to drive that message and hopefully raise some additional bucks to help take care of at least some of the issues with the folks in Ukraine.
Well, I'm going to be in Florida this weekend at the NFL owners meeting. I fall in love with a little brew pub down there off Oakland Park in Fort Lauderdale. And I always sort of stop in. At one point, we almost do a Ravens Super Bowl there that didn't happen.
Oh, cool.
With Lamar. And like a couple of years ago, bad things happened. But I was going to have a party at this brewery. And last time I was in there, I want to get this right. I think they had a maple butter pecan French toast bourbon. You know, it was like bacon something and a stout. And I'm like, oh man, I gotta have that. The creativity part of it—that's not you. I always think when a new line comes out, you got some blueberry biscuit ale thing happening or whatever.
I'm thinking we do some of that.
I think the Mad Professor's in the Bay. I think of you as the Mad Professor. I just do.
So we actually have two breweries within our facility. We have the Big Toys and then the Little Toys, and the Little Toys are where we do a lot of new product development. And where we can do the mad scientist stuff. So I you probably didn't know, but we've been making a Baltimore Snowball beer every July for the last 5 years.
I did not know that. What is that?
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. You know, what is the classic Baltimore Snowball? Oh, gosh.
That's egg custard.
Yeah. So we make an egg custard flavored beer.
Honey, he makes an egg custard flavored beer. My wife's going to hear me all the way across the room. Hugh Sisson is here. He is at Heavy Seas. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for making great beer. I'm sorry I didn't listen to you. I owe you a lottery ticket at the very least. And I'll come by and have a beer with you one day. But I really appreciate it. And, hope to see you somewhere along the line on the Crab Cake Tour. We'll get together and do it the right way, where we clang glasses and drink and be foolish like beer drinkers.
I look forward to it.
By the way, I thought of you today because I thought, because you're old like me, back in the 80s, the kids wouldn't understand this, but back in the 80s, and it may have been Stroh's, I don't know what beer it was. Yeah, it was one of those ones. They would say, Hugh Sisson, entrepreneur, local icon, beer drinker. You know, do you remember that one? It was like beer drinker. It was like part of the your profile. I'm going to put that up on Twitter. Crab cake eater, beer drinker. So, awesome. Hey, you, appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Appreciate the opportunity.
Everybody get down there to Heavy Seas and support you and do what they're doing with an incredible brewery in the Ukraine. And we're obviously supporting everybody over there as well. I'm supporting our friends at Royal Farms. This is my last year Chicken Palooza. It's 21. I'm hoping the 22 comes in like a bright red or something.
We do a beer for that.
That was your beer? I had a Royal Farms beer last year. It was yours.
Yeah, we did it.
I should have had you on. I told you I wanted to have you on the show. It took a freaking world war to get you back on the show. And I didn't even get a chicken wing out of this, man. I didn't get the recipe. Damn. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Cold beer at a reasonable price, as Bruce Springsteen once said, and BaltimorePositive.com.